You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hello and welcome to the Anfield Wrap as the countdown to the season begins. It's officially less than 2 weeks now until the season kicks off against Fulham, which I can't believe. But it's Harriet Pryor hosting this week. I've got Stu Wright with me, I've got Amelia Bonner with me, and I've got John Gibbons with me as we look forward to a week with three games, I think. Is that right, John? Three games, just coming thick and fast now. Community Shield on Saturday. But before we begin, we've had a lovely video come out over the weekend, which you might have seen, about Eric Farrington, a Liverpool fan since the early 1950s, who sadly passed away last month. But before that, with the help of Nivea Men UK, the Anfield Wrap surprised him at his care home with a visit from Kenny Dalglish. And warning, don't watch this if you've got makeup on or in public or any of the above, because I made all of those mistakes and it's not a good idea. But John, you were there on the day, so tell us a little bit about Eric and his story.
Yeah, we actually met Eric when a couple of the video lads did a story on Melwood. When Melwood closed, we wanted to do a story about the people who lived in the area. And They met Eric then, Ash and Sam, and really liked them and stayed in touch. And when we wanted to do a project of, when we were speaking to Nivea about a project around a connectivity, so it's a big thing for them and what they want to do, Nivea Men, around keeping people connected during the pandemic. And when we were looking for care homes and people who we could help donate these iPads to, we thought of Eric because he was living in a care home by then. He'd moved out of his house on Melwood Drive. And so we wanted to, you know, I mean, we sent loads of these iPads out, and I know we arranged around 50, and Liverpool Football Club did around the same. But when we wanted to do a little bit of a story about it, Eric was the person who came to mind because he's such an amazing fellow, had so many great stories. I mean, following Liverpool for as long as he had, he'd obviously have great stories, but it was fascinating hearing, you know, the tales of Liverpool and all that, and what it used to be like, you know, on the cop, and how the stadium had changed and how the football club had changed. But what I loved about him is he loved Liverpool Football Club like a 10-year-old, do you know what I mean? And that's when he started. But his love of the team and his face when Kenny Dalglish walked in will sort of live with me forever. And Kenny loved him. Kenny just wants to hear all his stories and stuff like that. Obviously, it's a 5-minute video that's gone out on our social and our YouTube, and do have a look if you've not seen it yet. But you know, we were there all sorts of afternoon with him, and could have gone into the evening, I think, as well, just hearing, you know, all his stories. Fantastic fella. Made up, we got to give him an amazing afternoon, but also, obviously, at the Wolves game, you know, Nivea Men give him some of their tickets for the last game of the season, and Ash went with him, and you know, he loved that. And, you know, Kenny came and saw him again and brought the FA Cup with him because we just won that and stuff like that. So it was great. And then obviously, you know, we'd have loved him to see the video, and we were getting news soon after that he wasn't well and it wasn't sort of looking good really. And then, you know, very sadly, he did pass away before we got the video out. But I know that the family are thrilled that they have this, and he got sort of that moment. Just, sorry, I'm getting a bit upset here. Just before he did pass away, that they got this wonderful day together, really, because they were all there at the care home on the day as well to see his dad when Kenny Dalglish walked round, and then his son went with him to the game as well, with Ash from our place. So yeah, it was a really lovely thing to be part of. There's been a couple of things recently we've done with Nivea Men. The other one was the Manny painting one, which was really fantastic. And these are projects that we've been working on over a year. It's a long time. It's obviously very different from, you know, just doing a podcast and sort of getting it out here. They take a lot of work, but obviously they're worth it when they come out, and they mean a lot to the people involved, and they mean a lot to to us to be able to tell these people's stories, really. So if you've not seen it yet, as Harriet says, we're the warning. Like, it is an emotional one. But I just want to give a shout out to Craig as well, because he's project managed the whole thing, and it's been a lot of work. Obviously, as you can imagine, trying to plan stuff with care homes in pandemic times and stuff. And the care home were brilliant, absolutely spot on, but it was just a big project, and it changed quite a lot over the year, what we were sort of going to do. But is natural relentlessness and pain in the arseness sort of came through, really, and he's done a brilliant job out of it. I'm dead proud of my mate as well. But yeah, just have a little watch. It's on our YouTube and our social. But yeah, I'm just really pleased that Eric's family liked it, and I'm really pleased that we were able to, you know, us alongside with Nivea Men and Liverpool, who've been spot on as well, have been able to like, you know, to give him this lovely moment just before we lost him.
Yeah, it's such a lovely video to commemorate him, and you guys, I know it was a lot of work for over a year with back and forth, so thankfully it all came together, and it's absolutely perfect. I had nothing to do with it, so I watched it as a viewer for the first time, and it made me very emotional. So yeah, you'll never walk alone, Eric, but it's a lovely video to commemorate that. So we'll move on emotionally into talking about
I know. I'm thinking about it again. I'm close to going again.
There's quite a lot I want to get through this week, so we'll try our best. But first of all, I wanted to have a closer look at Liverpool's evolution and the impact that this is going to have on our system, on individual players as well, because it's arguably the first time under Klopp where we're going into a season with so many unknowns. And Shu, I'll come to you on this first, because there's questions over who the starting 11 will be, how we're going to adapt to new players, what system we're going to play, and even where a lot of the new players are going to start. I mean, we've seen a few sort of signs of things in pre-season, but there's still a lot we don't know about next season heading into it, isn't there?
Yeah, there is, yeah. I think we've got to take what the manager said about being more unpredictable at face value. I think that will definitely be a thing that he's trying to aim towards, because there were some a few notable games, particularly perhaps the final, the Champions League final, where we were a bit predictable. I mean, Ancelotti basically laid that out post-match himself, didn't he, in what he said about us. So I think that is something that the manager will want to do. I've seen a lot of talk, and I've been guilty of this myself, actually, of making that assumption that we'll move into a 4-2-3-1. And actually, on reflection, I don't think that's something that we're going to see that often as a starting formation. I think it's something that we'll slip into at times in game. Because I do think when you've got a more natural centre forward than what we've been used to over the years, then automatically it creates space that's not being filled, linking between the midfield and the front three in the central areas. And I do think that there will be a more defined role from one of the midfielders to fill that space at times. So if it is Nunes that's playing through the middle rather than Bobby, I think we will see someone be stepping in. Whereas I've always thought of it as really like our midfield, like pistons, really, either side of Fabinho being the holding role and the shuttling back and forth. One maybe slightly more disciplined than the other, perhaps on the left-hand side. But I actually think that we might see it become even more disciplined on that left-hand side, and that right-hand side being the one that becomes the one that's really filling that space. I actually also think that there'll be times where it won't be either of the midfielders that fills that space. I think what we're seeing with Trent Alexander-Arnold's positions morphing over the last season, and we've seen it a lot in pre-season, he's actually filling that space. Mm-hmm. He's coming from the completely blind side.
At times, isn't it? Yeah.
Absolutely. Unorthodox number eight, but stepping in there from that wide position, no one sees it coming. And again, that really taps into that unpredictability. Mm-hmm. I think a couple of years ago, people were talking about he's playing like De Bruyne from a fullback position, but actually he's now quite a lot of the time when we're on the ball in the De Bruyne position.
Yeah.
So I think we'll see mix and match, really, and more adaptability. I really struggled to find that word then. More adaptability.
It's the Eric effect on a
in game Which can only be a good thing because it's time, I think, for that slight evolution of this Klopp team now.
Yeah, Emilio, Stu touched on it there about how Klopp wanted to go into a season with more unpredictability. And he said in an interview he wants to become more unpredictable for other teams. So a lot of teams he thought last season sort of were coming into us knowing how to approach us. Do you think this is all intentional, or do you think this is just Klopp saying, right, this is a situation we've been left with, Mane's left, we know that things are going to have to change, so we're going to use it to our advantage? Or do you think this was his plan all along?
I think it's a very intentional and well-considered and well-thought-out reaction to circumstances that we don't always have control over. So kind of rather than going, Mane's gone, so let's look to replace him with a kind of like-for-like replacement, it's like going, here's how we're going to use this to our advantage, rather than just kind of trying to bolster or like replace what we had and do the best that you can. Instead of going, we're going to make this into a strength and turn it into something that will make us harder to play. Because I think Stu's right that, especially towards the end of the season, there were games where it really felt like teams kind of had our number a bit. I don't know if that's the right turn of phrase to use, but particularly teams that kind of they weren't challenging for the title,
come
they weren't
in,
challenging for
block,
anything,
exactly.
But they just knew kind of what to do to break down what we did so well, mm-hmm. and to frustrate us and to not let us play the way that we wanted to play. So I guess the kind of natural solution to that is don't let them know what the way that we want to play is, because it will be different from week to week and depending on who's on the pitch. So I think it's just Klopp all over, isn't it? That I guess the situation isn't one that he necessarily would have had in the master plan, and it's not what he will have been planning for years to come. But I think that it's his way of adapting to it and going, well, rather than just react, we're going to turn it into a strength.
Yeah, he's so good at reacting to any situation he's given and turning it into a positive. John, you've been watching some of the pre-season games. We've been watching them upstairs, but they've made things a little bit clearer, I think. But one area where I still think there's a lot of uncertainty is the forward line. So we'll touch on that a bit. In the first half against Leipzig, we saw Salah, Diaz and Firmino starting, and then Nunes came in the second half. Who do you sort of see starting the season? Do you think he'll drop Nunes in straight away, or do you think we'll see more of that classic, you know, front three with Firmino in there to start with?
I think it really depends, Harry, what happens over the next week or so. And I think, you know, those first few pre-season games were about, well, a few different things. Obviously, we went out to Asia to play in front of the fans there. And you know, there's the commercial reasons around these tours as well. But they were a much around, you know, the games were about, you know, having a look at everyone, little bits of sharpness, but also being out there and giving opportunities for fans in that area of the world to sort of see them. And then the Leipzig game, you know, you start to see, well, the manager's taking a little bit more seriously, if you're now using less players, you know, using something that was more akin to a starting 11. But it was fairly similar to how we played last season, really, both in terms of formation and setup and what he was asking the sort of players to do. I think these the really interesting ones Wednesday for me, because, you know, he's had this week now where you know, in the training camp that him and Pepe Linders love, which is all about, I think is all going to be all about gearing up to next season. So although it takes Stu's points around, you know, 4-2-3-1 and we haven't necessarily seen it yet, so it feels less likely, but you know, it wouldn't surprise me if on Wednesday we start seeing some of the things they have been working on over the last week, really. And that might not be a formation change. It might be sort of little more subtle things in terms of, you know, as Stu said, what you're asking that third midfielder to do, what you're asking Trent to do and things like that. But I think, you know, Leipzig was fun because we got 5 goals and we got 4 for Darwin and all that. But I think the really interesting one's going to be Wednesday, and then, because I don't think you want to give too much away in the Community Shield. I don't think either of them will, really. So I think what you'll see on Saturday is, you know, a strong first 60, which is pretty much the lads who he knows going pretty much against City how we have done in the past. And then I think you'll see, you know, a lot of subs. And if that means we end up sort of losing the game, then I don't think too bothered. And then Sunday, you know, we'll see a completely sort of changed team. So we're all eyes on Wednesday for me, Harry. We'll be doing it on hot mic. I'll be trying to say loads of clever things, scratching my chin and stuff like that, and talking about, you know, passages of play and using words I don't completely understand. But I think I think that's the interesting one. And to take your point, to answer your question on Darwin, I think it really depends on, like, if you'd have asked me last week, I'd have said, like, we might not see him start for the first few, but then, you know, if he keeps knocking 4.5 in, then you sort of, you know, change the manager's mind there, don't you? I think he'd love to have selection headaches, you know, going into Fulham. He'd love to be, you know, Wednesday or Thursday before the game, still going after. How are we going to leave two or three of these out? That's the dream for him, and that's the dream for all of us, isn't it? He's suddenly going, you know, I've got too many lads absolutely flying here.
Yeah.
What 10 lads are going to pick with Mo Salah?
Well, you sound excited about it, and that's what Klopp said, because I think he sensed that a few fans were maybe sure feeling a little bit nervous about the changes, and he said in a quote, "You don't have to be worried when you think about us. You can be excited about what's possible for us." I feel like it's such a Klopp quote. I love it. But with Nunes coming in, for me, it's going to be interesting to see whether we adapt to him or whether he has to adapt to us. So what I've seen sort of so far is it's clear that he's trying to work on his pressing game. He's trying to be a bit more of a Liverpool forward. We were playing in that standard 4-3-3. So like you, I maybe thought we changed formation. Now I'm starting to think there's more of an expectation where he's going to have to adapt to our system. What do you think? How do you think that's going to work?
I think when you look at his performances last season, and obviously everyone remembers how he played against us in particular, there's a lot of the raw ingredients there of a Liverpool play. You know, there's pace, there's power. He's very happy to press. He works really hard. And we've spoken about the fact that he's more of an orthodox centre forward potentially, which gives us a slightly different edge. But I think for me, one of the things that marks out the great Liverpool strikers, the ones that really we take to our hearts, is they can do a lot of those things, but they're also really, really good at looking after the ball and bringing other players into play. They show that intelligence. That's what Liverpool fans love in a centre forward. Rushy had it. Dalglish had it. Torres could look after the ball. Salah's slightly different because he plays out wide, so it's not quite the same position, not quite the same level of responsibility, but when he needs to, he can look after the ball as strong as an ox. So Bobby, you know, don't even have to say how well he can look after the ball. He just facilitates everything. And I think that'll be the hardest thing, I think, for Nunes to live up to. I think it'll be the hardest thing. We've thought this for a while. For any striker coming in after Bobby into that central area, it was going to be very, very difficult for them. And I think we shouldn't expect that he'll link the play like Bobby. He's not going to be. Firmino's such a unique player in world football. The likes I've never really seen before in that position, so we shouldn't expect him to do that. But what we need from him is to be tidy, to hold the ball up, to link the play, to show that intelligence. And I think to do that, we've got to be very careful that we don't put too much pressure on him. And I think during the season, Liverpool fans will be very good at that. To be honest, that we've shown that in the past, we can be very patient with our centre forwards. I think during pre-season, it's a bit different because you fill in the gap. There's a gap that the football season is over. Everyone's without it, and we're almost in danger of filling the space with, first of all, transfer desperation, and then transfer panic of what they're going to be like.
Don't talk about Rob like that.
So you know that level of anxiety. But I always think back, when Nunes was arguably in very limited game time over those first couple of games, perhaps not having a flyer, my instinct was to think back to Torres. His first pre-season, he had a mare.
Nunes had also only played 50 minutes of football when everyone was just losing their minds.
Exactly.
It's crazy.
And I remember with Torres, he didn't really start until we played Chelsea in that first game, and then he came to life. And what a player we had on our hands. And I think we've got to, you know, take pre-season with a little bit of a pinch of salt, particularly, as John said before, those first couple of games where it's very much about everything else rather than necessarily the quality of football. It's just about, you know, getting the players fit again and actually doing the commercial side as well. So really excited, but I'm confident that once the season starts, as long as Nunes shows that intelligence that I'm sure he's got, and that, you know, he can look after the ball, then I'm sure everyone will be very patient with him, and hopefully we won't even have to be.
Yeah, I take pre-season with a pinch of salt, but I did really celebrate his second goal, the one that wasn't the penalty, because it was just a nice moment. He looked really, really happy. Amelia, Klopp's spoken a lot about how we can step up next season and how you take a team who's already winning two trophies and getting Champions League final on the last day of the Premier League to another level. Is maybe a pure out-and-out striker a number nine what the missing ingredient, perhaps?
Yeah, I think that when I think about it, because of the kind of the timing around it, Mane having left and Diaz having already been there and already got quite a few games, I think it's not that he was what we were necessarily missing because Mane was gone, but it might have been what we were missing more generally. I think Diaz is the replacement for Mane and will kind of grow to be that, especially kind of where he's going to be playing. But then I think that having Darwin kind of brings something else to it and gives us like a... And when you were saying about Bobby, I agree that he plays differently to anyone you've ever seen. And that's why I'm excited by Darwin potentially being like a, not a simpler, but like a truer number nine than Bobby is, because Bobby does so much more than that. But sometimes that isn't what you need necessarily, kind of when it comes to finishing or when it comes to winning a football match. You might want to bring on
scoring
someone
in finals, which we struggle with last season.
That it's like Bobby's so creative and he makes so much else happen. But then I think having a player now that is a true number nine in a way that we haven't really had for a very long time, because that isn't Bobby, and that's not to Bobby's detriment. It's just that he's kind of so much more than that. Is very exciting. And I think I, rather than kind of being uncertain or not knowing what I'm going to get from that front three, I'm really excited to see what it's going to be. I was absolutely devastated at Sadio Mane leaving, and I still am, and I'm still not over it. And the first game, it's going to feel really sad to be like, right, the season's back and Mane is not here.
Bring Sadio on. Oh, shit.
Yeah, oh, he's gone. Still wearing my scarf,
crying.
No,
what this game needs, Sadio.
But I think rather than thinking about how is it going to work out and how are we going to look, I'm trying to just be excited and almost see it as like a new dawn for my love of Liverpool's forwards, of kind of going, well, this is going to be a brand new thing that I get to fall in love with all over again, rather than seeing like for like replacements, we're kind of tearing it up and starting again in a way.
It is a new dawn and it's a new chapter, John, and I think that impact is not only going to affect the forward line, but it's going to affect how the rest of the team play. And I'm particularly interested in the midfield, because our midfield is a particularly difficult place to play. We say that all the time because of the system and the way we set up. I think next season they might have even more capacity to be more creative without expecting the finished product from them, because people say our midfield lacks goals, you know, they don't have the finished product. They almost don't need to next season. They can be the providers. Someone like Thiago I look at, and I think he can really have that creative impact without any pressure to score, because he can go through, give it to one of, you know, our out and out striker now, and hope that he does the end product.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, if you're stressing over Thiago's goal return, then you're watching football wrong, in my opinion, honestly. You know, for everything that he does and everything that he facilitates, and, you know, his class on the ball, you know, his ability to find space and you know, those vertical passes, you know, into the area that you know, sometimes you don't even see from your lovely vantage point in the Kenny Dalglish stand, like where I sit. His vision sort of absolutely incredible, really. And you know, for someone like Thiago, it's just about getting him on the pitch. But then, you know, if he's, you know, last season we often got him and Keita working sort of in tandem, really, and sort of mixing up the games and keeping them fresh, and both were performing, you know, one stage at a really high level. And so if you've got that, if you've got sort of Fabinho and then behind them, and then Henderson able to sort of come in and obviously get games in any of the positions, really, I think it gives you a really good platform, and there's a lot of class there, a lot of quality, a lot of experience as well. But also they will dominate most midfields and win you know, battles, but also sort of, you know, possession and territory for Liverpool. And I think it does allow you to go for a slight wild card option with that third midfielder. And I think that's what we're going to see when Stu was talking more about the evolution of the team. And, you know, we've all been talking about, you know, unpredictability, what Amelia was talking about before, about well, how do you really keep these defences on the toes who are setting up to sort of cope with a forward line. And I mean, first of all, we've mixed up the forward line now as well, and we've got different sorts of skills. And, you know, if you're trying to, you know, defend too deep when you've got someone like Darwin in the box, then all the best. But I think, you know, for that extra midfielder who's going to almost act like a forward, and, you know, there's two options there in Elliott and Carvalho, who I think we're going to see a lot of next season. For me, I don't necessarily think it's going to be, you know, one or the other. I think they'll... I'm not expecting sort of one of them to emerge as a big star and the other one to be the understudy, like similar way, I guess, to Keita and Thiago. I think he'll be mixing it up, but he'll be looking for that wild card, really, for that flair player who's able to, you know, do the dirty work in midfield. And listen, this lad will have to work because he plays for Liverpool Football Club, and they expect them to all to, but also a little bit more license when we do have the ball to take some risks, or to be really sort of high up, really, and to pick up pockets of space that the opposition aren't necessarily, you know, expecting us to. I think we'll see a lot of that next season, really, and I think I'm really excited for it, because we got a glimpse of it last year with Elliot, didn't we? But then the injury happened. But I think Ellie's just a better player now as well. He's just a little bit older, and the stuff I've seen from him in the summer so far, I'm really excited about chatting to him out in Bangkok and just having sorts of conversations that, you know, on the side of the pitch and stuff. He just sounds so driven, and you know, he's very, very motivated to have a good season for Liverpool. And as Amelia says, Carvalho's just sort of fitted in and is blowing everyone away with what he's doing. And so I think those two are almost, you know, the ones who are, and it's mad to say for young players, but the next evolution of Liverpool Football Club is these superstar kids.
Yeah, let's touch on some of those wild cards. Amelia, I remember when you did the post-match. After Leeds, and he got injured, and you were like, we don't know how he's going to come back, how Elliot's going to, you know, how he's going to recover from this injury, what he's going to be like. He looks so good, and he did look really good at the end of last season as well. Is he a player you see playing more of a role next season as we do try and become more unpredictable, do try and bring in some wild cards and use some of our younger talent?
Yeah, absolutely. I think with Elliot, before the injury, the extent to which he was demanding minutes on the pitch at such a young age and at such a kind of early stage in his Liverpool career was astounding. And that's why the injury was so worrying. And I think that the way he's come back from that, like the tenacity with which he's made sure that recovery is happening quickly and is happening as effectively as possible, he'll almost be demanding it more now coming back from this of going, I was brilliant before and was demanding to be played with what he was showing, and now he's managed to come back from this, like what more reason could you have to get him on there? He obviously wants it so much. And I think that the piece you sent me was really interesting in saying that Carvalho, the midfield's the area where I kind of wish there had been one more, and I understand why there hasn't been, but that Carvalho is a really important signing because he then allows us to be more creative with players like Elliot, so Elliot can be going further forward, and I think that's something that he's more than capable
Elliot
of doing.
Elliot could also play in the forward line, like we don't really know yet whether he's going to be a midfielder, whether he's going to be a forward, or Klopp will use him in both positions,
and that it frees him up to do that. So when John's saying that it's not that one of them will necessarily be the star and the other the understudy, it might be that the one kind of enables the other to move into a role that might not have been possible if we hadn't signed Carvalho. And I think that I'm absolutely buzzing to see more of him. I was so excited every single time he did get onto the pitch before the injury last season, and I just think he's got so much to show, and he's such an exciting young player, and yeah, the hunger is there and the fire in his belly. And I think it's only been kind of double, tripled, quadrupled, but with that injury and coming back from it, like he wants it so much, and I want it for him.
Yeah, John's smiling. I think he's remembering talking to Harvey Elliott last week, but I'll let him have his memories to himself for a minute. Stu, Carvalho is really, really exciting me. I didn't think he'd be sort of as, basically there's no pressure on him, is there? So I didn't think next season he'd come in and play a lot of games. Now I'm starting to see glimpses of him in pre-season, and he looks really, really good, but more than that, he looks really comfortable and looks like he just wants to give it a go. Have you seen much of him so far, and what sort of role do you think Carvalho might play next season?
Just a bit that everyone else has seen, and you know, like everyone else, I've been really shocked of how he's taken to it, like a duck to water. He's got some skill set, you know, his ability to take the ball on the turn and then speed away from people. I mean, he's got real pace there, but real pace on the ball as well, which not all players have, that ability to dribble right into the heart of teams and really puncture their defences, sort of draw them in. And then he's got that intelligence as well, which you've seen, where he'll draw them in and then he'll lay it off to the player that's now naturally in space. He's a really, really exciting addition, I think, to whether it's the midfield or the forward line. I think it'll tend to be what we said at the very beginning of the show when we talked about that space that will now emerge potentially between the midfield and forward line. And that space has to be filled if the team is going to connect. The danger, I always think the danger when teams don't think about this is when they do have a more orthodox front line, is that it becomes straight lines and it becomes disconnected and there lacks the fluidity. But you have a player like Carvalho, and that's a bit of a moot point straight away, because he will bring that connectivity. I didn't expect him to be getting, I now think he'll get the minutes this season that I didn't think he was going to get when we signed him. Yeah. I thought he was going to be a development player, even potentially a player that we loaned back to Fulham. But now there's no way I want him to go anywhere else. Absolutely not. He looks frightening.
Yeah, I'll come back to you quickly on this, because Klopp's spoken about how he doesn't know where his best position is, and he doesn't know if he's going to be an 8, a 10, an out-and-out striker. He doesn't really know yet. That's a really exciting thing for me. But also, he's talked about him as a long-term project. We know Klopp loves a long-term project, but in the short term, I think he's going to have a much bigger role. But do you see him longer term playing as a striker, or do you think he'll be more a midfielder? Or do you think Klopp will let him just float for a while and see where his best position is?
I like him as a midfielder. I like him in being in a position
potential
where he's got
Thiago replacement, I think, in a few years.
Maybe, but I think I like the fact that a player like him, when he gets the ball deeper and he can run at teams, what I was saying before, he can attract the opposition, he can draw them into spaces that they don't want to be in. Mm. I think if he's in the forward line, then he's got to then potentially come with his back to goal, or he needs the space to run in behind. Whereas I think the level of close control that he's got and ability to turn on a sixpence is. I've never used a sixpence in my life. I don't know why I use that.
It's an excellent phrase for the kids.
But yeah, his ability to turn and run into space, I think he's incredibly dangerous. If he has, and I've not seen enough of him yet, if he has the ability to develop all the other necessary attributes to play in a midfield in a number eight position, then by God, we've got a player.
Yeah. John, Curtis Jones, the final sort of wild card, I think, for the next season. He's a big fan of the Anfield Rap as well, which is a,
is he indeed?
Not a surprise. I mean, I don't Excellent. Know. He said you've got to talk to the Anfield Rap, didn't he, on tour? John, you can tell that story better than me. But I think he'll be another one next season that will be brought into the midfield more, maybe in games against lower league sides, or maybe just, you know, pop up now and again. Do you think we'll see more of him next season?
I hope so. Yeah, I hope so. I really like him as a footballer and as a kid, obviously, as well. I think he's great. And you know, we've seen him sort of growing up on these tours now, really, when we've sort of been out there, really. We always sort of have a laugh with him, and it was nice for him to get Cavallo over to sort of talk to us and let him know, you know, what the Anfield was all about. It's important documentation, isn't it? You know, it's a Liverpool football club. But yeah, he's a super talented footballer, and I think, you know, he is still trying to figure out a little bit what type of player he is in a Liverpool system. And you know, it can be tough for young players sometimes, because you know, you go from being the star in the academy and everything sort of comes through you. And you know, I used to go and watch that under 18s team quite a lot, and when sort of Gerrard was manager and stuff like that, and before I had kids, we used to sort of go down to Kirby and they were good fun, and he was the main fella. And you know, you go from that to suddenly you're in these team of superstars, and he's a bit more sort of a cog in a machine, really, and trying to do that, which I think he is trying really hard to do. I don't think that can be denied, that he is really trying to sort of fit into that. But also, I think sometimes he tries so hard, he forgets the things, you know, he forgets the flair he's got, he forgets the quality that he has got on the ball, and, you know, the wild cardness of his sort of play. Really is someone who can really sort of make things happen. So I think for him, the challenge is, you know, obviously getting minutes, because there's a lot of talented midfielders in there. You know, we've just run through a lot, and sort of I didn't even get on to him or James Milner, who I think, you know, still got a obviously role to play. So the challenge is getting minutes, and then when getting in the team, you know, doing all the things that Klopp wants from a midfielder, but also showing what he's about and what he has that other midfielders that we've got don't really. And so it's a big season for him. I feel like we've been saying that for a couple of years, but it is a big season for him. But I back him to do it. You know, he's confident, he's talented. And it's funny, so I think you said actually about Ricardo maybe sort of, you know, the next Thiago. I think he's watching Thiago really carefully. I'm seeing some of his movement now, and it's very sort of Thiago-esque, that idea of, you know, when Thiago beats a player, he's not even touched the ball. It's just the movement of the body and stuff like that. I'm starting to see more and more of that from Curtis Jones. It wouldn't surprise me if the midfielder he's watching most is Thiago, and he's looking at how he's creating from a deeper position. He's, you know, that left-hand side suits him better, I think, a little bit. We tried him a little bit in that third attacking role last season, and I don't think it massively worked. I think it's the left-hand side, slightly deeper midfield role, that I think suits him better now. But you see the way Thiago plays it, and you know, the creativity that he's able to show from that say deeper position, I think that's what Jones is watching, and I think we'll see sort of more of that. And listen, he's got some, you know, even as Curtis Jones' biggest fan, I know he's got some distance to go to sort of get up to that level, really. But he's super young, he's still super young, and the manager, you know, believes in him, and you know, as long as he's able to be patient, and that's tough for him sometimes because he thinks he should be playing every week. But I think as long as you know, he stays patient, and I think the extra sub thing will help him hopefully, because yeah, you know, there's certain games where, you know, the same games where you can see it being like, oh, you know, we want James Milner on now, and then there's others where it'd be hopefully actually we can go a bit of Curtis Jones here, and I think that'll hopefully help him, but we shall see. But there's plenty of games.
Yeah, there is plenty of games. Thiago, I wrote it down because it really made me laugh. He said they were all watching in the second half during Leipzig when some of the bigger players, you presume the starting 11, were rested, and he said they were so audacious with the things that they do. And I really wonder if Thiago actually said the word audacious. But anyway, Amelia, my final thing in this before we go on to talk a bit about Manchester City and the Community Shield is there's going to be opportunities for everyone throughout the pitch. You know, in defence, we're not sure who's going to line up alongside Van Dijk. In midfield, mm-hmm. we're not sure who's going to start forward. We've spoken about here. It's going to be pushing everyone on, isn't it? And there's going to be a higher level expected in training and on the pitch when people get their chances.
Yeah, I think I sometimes fall into the trap of when we make sign-ins of kind of thinking, oh, that'll be a great opportunity for Trent to have a rest, rather than thinking this will push Trent even more and there'll be someone challenging for a spot and it'll give him even more of a drive, as if he even needs one, to be wanting to be the person in the starting 11 every single week. I think that with Andy Robertson and with Trent, you've now got two replacements. I know we haven't like seen Ramsey kind of replacing him in real games in the season yet, but I would be entirely confident in going Trent's resting and this lad looks like he's absolutely brilliant. And then Tsimikas, everything that he's shown has been absolutely spot on, where you're not worrying where two of the most crucial players are being rested. And I think seeing it as that kind of a positive double-edged sword, in that they get to have a rest when they need one, because Andy Robertson and Trent put more minutes in than almost anyone on the pitch. They never get a break. So seeing them as being able to have that, but also it being that kind of driving force to make them go, I still want to be the number one though. And then I think the Van Dijk question is, it's an obvious one. Like, it's just always Van Dijk, but who's next to him is going to be really interesting this season. And I just think we're so lucky compared to where we were two seasons ago in terms of having this embarrassment of riches of options to kind of be lining up next to him, that you've got Matip in the form of his career for Liverpool so far towards the end of that season and kind of finally being past injuries that felt like it was always stop start and he never kind of got into that run of form that we wanted to see him in. Gomez being absolutely phenomenal. Like, the defence could not be better and couldn't be stronger, both in terms of the first choices that we hope to see lining up and then the replacements that we've got for them as and when.
Yeah, embarrassment of riches. We'll go on to talk about another team with an embarrassment of riches, Manchester City, because it's 6 days until the Community Shield. It's coming around thick and fast, so it's a great time to get on board and download the app. The Anfield Wrap on the App Store, or what's the Android App Store called? Android Store? Android Play. For all our pre and post match content, you can get yourself some free tokens as well to sample some of our lovely content, and then you'll want to come on board because we all have such a lovely time and you'll want to join us in that. There's transfer shows as well. Rob is really, really, you know, getting everything out of every tiny link, and I'm getting excited about every tiny link as well. So yeah, come and join us as we look ahead to the new season. It's a good time to come on board. It feels a bit early, Stu, to go into full preview mode, but the game against Manchester City in the Community Shield, it feels like it will be a good marker of where both teams are at going into the new season.
It does. I'd like to win it.
I love the Community Shield. I want to win it.
I'm not normally a big fan, but I think we've surrendered it a little bit in recent years, and I just like to just put a marker down against Manchester City in the first game. I just like to win it. It's going to be a bit weird because it's not at Wembley, is it? It's in Leicester.
Leicester, yeah.
That's a mad one, isn't it?
Why is it because of the Women's Euros, is it at Wembley?
Oh, is it still?
Is that why?
It's on this Sunday, yeah. I think that's why.
Got you. But again, Leicester's a weird shout for it. Dead hard to get to.
Apparently only two stadiums went for it.
Really?
Yeah. Who was the other one, John?
Can't remember.
Okay. Put it in the Millennium Stadium. Put it in the Millennium Stadium.
Everything in the Millennium Stadium, please.
But I think... it's funny, we spoke about formations earlier on, and I do think that we saw... It's funny, isn't it? Because I do think there is a symmetry although they're very different within the formations, within the style that they play, within those formations. I think there is a little bit of a symmetry in the evolution of the two teams, and I do think we saw last season Guardiola trying to gain more control and be more cautious with his midfield, and it was very much a two, a lot more in the holding positions than previously, and I think we will see that solidified next season. Now they've signed what's his face from Leeds,
Calvin Phillips.
I think that'll be very much a thing. Him with someone, help me out, the Spanish lad, Rodri. Here we go. I think that will be a thing there, because now I think he's probably recognised the fact that if he is going with a very orthodox centre forward, and Haaland is very much that, then I think that they will try to make sure, and they're going to have to then fill the gaps in behind. I noticed that in in pre-season has been talk, although he's only played one game, but the game that he played, Haaland, there was talk about a good link-up with Grealish. I was really, really surprised that they sold Sterling.
Yeah,
I was really surprised that last year he didn't get more game time to solve that problem anyway. I think he will be a huge miss from them for them next season. And I think that when you look at the pace or lack thereof in wide areas, now he's gone. Because you're very much relying on maybe Silva going out there. Grealish tends to come inside as the Silva. Mahrez tends to come inside from that right-hand side. So where's the width coming from when the fullbacks tend to come into the central areas as well? Maybe that's going to change if they're going to go with two holders. Maybe they're not going to feel the need to have at least one of their fullbacks coming into those central areas, and maybe they're going to be more overlapping.
Cancelo's right-footed though, isn't he? So his inclination will always be to come inside.
To come inside, if he's playing on that side, yeah.
Yeah.
If he's playing on that side. So, but yeah, it'd be interesting. But as I said before, I just want to win. I've never really been bothered about the Charity Shield, but I do fancy it this time.
Yeah. I just want us to win every game we're in, but, you know, that's just me. I mean, Sterling, I was also surprised, John, that they let him go because, like you said, they lost a lot of width, they lost a lot of assists and a lot of goals from Sterling as well. They've also let Fernandinho go, Zinchenko, Jesus to Arsenal. They've given a few players to what maybe they wouldn't class as rivals, but who, you know, in terms of the top six in the Premier League are rivals. They've obviously brought Calvin Phillips in, Haaland in, they brought another goalkeeper in as well, I think. Do you feel like they've strengthened from where they were last season? Because if there was one thing that Pep Guardiola said last season is that he actually felt they lacked a bit of squad depth, especially when there was issues in defence and they had a few injuries. I mean, from everyone else and every other fan in the Premier League, we thought that was ridiculous. Yeah. But internally, they felt like they were lacking a bit of squad depth. Have they done much to remedy that so far?
No, they haven't, which is quite interesting. If anything, I think they're arguably more reliant now on a smaller group. I think they're putting a lot of their eggs into the Haaland basket. And listen, he's a really good footballer, but you know, he doesn't play every game. He does pick up injuries and things like that. And it maybe will take him a little bit of time to settle. He gets his goal the other night and obviously they win 1-0. And that's what they've signed him for, isn't it? To you know, when they're playing a team like Bayern Munich, albeit in a friendly, that, you know, when it's a bit sort of cagey, you know, to have that sort of difference maker. He scores, you know, a centre-forwards goal. And, you know, we're talking about, you know, Darwin being this maybe centre-forward style that we haven't had before, and what Amelia was talking about before, you know, they're saying the similar things. He's right in front of the net where he needs to be. By all accounts, he didn't have the best game in the world and looked a bit sort of off it, but he's there when it matters. And I think that they would argue that that's what they've missed and that's what's hurt them, particularly in the Champions League, in these games that are tight. You know, this lad who just pops up for a goal for you and is in the right place at the right time when you need it. So I can see where they've gone for him, but I'm a little bit surprised with, you know, that they've let some others go, and maybe they feel that that's necessary. And it's all well and good us saying, like, well, you know, Sterling's a great player and why are you letting him go? But the manager needs to keep them happy, and if he's struggling too, and if they're starting to say, well, you know, Jesus, I'd rather go to Arsenal and be the main man and get picked every week and play number nine and all this, rather than being an out of the side and being asked to do all sorts, do you know what I mean? Sterling didn't play at all in his favourite position from what I saw sort of last year, really, and maybe feels that that's more likely to happen at Chelsea. And so it's all these things, and it's managing. Guardiola's an intense manager as well, and you know, he maybe feels that he needs a little bit of change just to sort of keep it fresh and to have people who are, you know, who aren't just burnt out by him, to be honest with you, and his wonderful genius intensity. And so I think they'll feel like they've freshened, but to answer your question on whether they've sort of strengthened in terms of having more, you know, first team squad players, yeah. I don't think they have. And I think I would imagine when we're on the phone to David Mooney, you know, in the early of the season, I'll be having similar conversations to having some last season, which was, yes, we've got a lot of really, really good players, but it doesn't take much, you know, in terms of injuries or whatever, to start having a few worries or form or whatever. You know, they need big seasons from the big players, but listen, they've done it before, haven't they? And they're still going to take some beat, and you know, whatever we say.
I think they're going to go big on one more.
Yeah.
I think there's plenty of time left in the window, isn't
there?
In
what area of the pitch?
Well, there's been a lot of talk about Neymar, isn't it? Because Neymar's got to get out of PSG. Or that's been the talk, hasn't it? Because they need to move him on now. There's some contractual issue there, something. And where's he going to go? And I do think that there is, I mean, I'd be made up if they signed Neymar, to be honest, because I think he'd be a problem for them. But
do you think Haaland will be a problem for them?
Who?
Haaland.
I think what John said before about he doesn't play every game, I think that'll be the biggest problem for them. I think that, that Guardiola will try and accommodate the change of shape in a way that perhaps he couldn't do when he had Zlatan at Barcelona. I think, I don't think he'll have done this blindly. I think he will have learned from that scenario, and he's evolved as a manager, and the Premier League's a very different league than what La Liga was at that time as well. But I do think if they were, because I don't know where Neymar would go. I'm honestly struggling to think where else we'd go. And I do think there is an element of City trying to, they're still not completely established their brand globally. I think that could be a marker. I mean, don't forget last season they came very close to signing Ronaldo, which was completely mad and out of kilter with everything that you think Guardiola would do. So I do think that there's a Neymar move potentially that could happen. It's gone quiet over the last couple of weeks, but I know it was being spoken about a lot before then, unless I've missed something. But I wouldn't be scared at all. I think he'd bring problems to the table for them.
I think what you say about that kind of like not knowing what their brand is, I always strongly get the sense with signings that they make that it's like they don't quite know which of the cliques in school they fit in with. So like they buy the Paul's Boutique bag because that's what... Do you know what I mean? Because you're like, oh, well, that's the item that everyone wants. But then they've also got like the flaming Converse at the Goths wear, where it's like they want to get... Well, it's the thing that you're meant to do rather than the thing that necessarily fits in or shows like a level of understanding of what you're doing. They're the big money signings and they're the things that make people go, ooh, rather than it actually kind of being cohesive or making sense with what you are as a football team.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I think it's interesting for Guardiola because he doesn't like to go into things with any sense of uncertainty. He has got that. Amelia, I'll come back to you. We saw last season how in the head-to-heads it was so toe-to-toe in the league. It was so toe-to-toe. Do you expect the same going into next season? Is there any other teams you realistically think can challenge?
No, and I'm exhausted. And even thinking about it makes me feel a little bit tired and want to lie down. That it'll just be absolutely fucking relentless again. Like it's just going to be completely relentless. And I think the Community Shield being the first of it is kind of good because it'll just let me dip a little toe before going all the way into the big hot bath that it's going to be. In the it's everything around it as well. Like when we face them and everything, it's why I'm so glad it wasn't them in the Champions League final, because the kind of Liverpool City endless kind of rivalry is, it's so difficult, and it's because we both just keep getting better and we both just keep pushing each other further and challenging more for absolutely everything, that the kind of the pressure around every single time we face them and the narrative around it all is just exhausting, but it's not over yet. I don't get any sense that it will be, and I think that that's why the Community Shield's going to be kind of the first little foray into that. But I think it will be much like last season, just absolutely relentless and ending up supporting three football teams in whoever whoever is playing City and whoever's playing Everton. And yeah, I thought I was ready for it, but maybe I'm not. Actually, just thinking about that again.
We need more time. We need more than 2 weeks. Do you have any other teams that can challenge? Tottenham have brought in some strong new signings, so have Arsenal, but do you still think they're going to be competing for a top four spot rather than pushing Aston City?
Yeah, no, I think there'll be... I think by the break for the World Cup, I think it'll be clear that Liverpool and City are the front runners. I think there's always some early season form that doesn't really shake down until around November, December time. And obviously we've got this interruption now. But I certainly think by maybe the World Cup break or by the turn of the year, it'll be clear that Liverpool and City are on top. But I do think there'll be movers and shakers in the pack below. I think I think there's been some good business done by Arsenal. I think there's potentially been some good business done by Tottenham, but the most important thing that Tottenham have done is kept Conte, and he's had a pre-season.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you've got to take that seriously. But I just don't think they'll reach the threshold needed to topple either us or City. I think it's interesting the mood music coming out of Chelsea at the moment isn't positive.
Yeah, he's called them shite, hasn't he?
Was not happy yesterday.
Haven't seen a manager talk his team down like that since Lampard last week.
He really did criticise every single element of basically the whole team. It was interesting.
It was almost like he wasn't the manager of the football club. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? He was like, have you seen the state of these? Who's managing them?
like a journalist in the press conference. Honestly, like, what's going on with your team?
Exactly,
and he's like, oh shit, it is my team.
Yeah, bought half of them, fuck.
Yeah.
And I think it's 50-50 as well with United at the moment, because I think there are really positive signs for United fans that he's come in and brought discipline and brought shape, and you know, no surprise that someone like Sancho is playing better as a result and scoring goals. But there's a massive difference, isn't there, between what's happening in pre-season.
People will be fuming you brought them into the conversation.
No, I think I'd like to temper it. That's what I'm trying to do.
Brought really. Them into the system.
I'm doing it to just, you know, cut the legs from underneath them, because I think, you know, there could be a team that has a very nice August. But I think as the season goes on, that'll be the proof will be in the pudding then around whether Ten Hag is having the impact that he needs to. I think they've been... They must be. I mean, I think they're incredibly frustrated in the transfer market, aren't they? So I think there's still moves to be made for them there. But I'm not sure that they'll do enough to necessarily catch up Arsenal and Tottenham. And I think Chelsea's just a bit of a shower at the moment. They've got too many good players to completely fall away, haven't they, Chelsea? Yeah. So, you know, Crystal Hall could be a bit of bluff.
John, going to win the Community Shield?
I think so, yeah. The way the two teams have approached pre-season is sort of quite interesting. This will be our fifth game and City's third, which, you know, I mean, there's no perfect way to do it, but I'd rather have be overcooked and undercooked, if you like, and then we play again the next day and they've got nothing, so we go. So we're actually playing double the number of pre-season games than they are, which, you know, as I say, you know... I might end up looking silly when we go Saturday and they look sharper than us, but I think I fancy us to look a little bit sharper. I fancy us to sort of look a little bit, you know, more like, as I say, we've benefited from these sorts of extra games. We play Wednesday night and then sort of roll into Saturday. And the only thing is how he approaches it as a 90-minute game. I don't think there's extra time in this. I think they went straight to penalties last year, which we obviously ended up losing. So it's just whether... You know, does he go as strong as possible and treat it like a normal game, if you like? And yes, make the subs, but they're all top quality ones, you know, to swap and sort of in and out. Or do you see, you know, wholesale changes like we saw last time, you know, and then a sort of, you know, a weaker team, if you like? Because although our squad's obviously fantastic, it doesn't take much. You know, when you're playing against a team like Man City, what we saw in the FA Cup semi-final last year is when you put your 15th to 18th best players out like City did, you know, that's fine when you're playing, I don't know, Everton, for example. Picking on the poor Blues. They had a good win at Blackpool at the weekend, boys, well done. You know, it's all right, well and good when you play most of the Premier League, but when these two are up against each other, I think it's you know, it's really the elite you want to see out there. So I think it depends how Klopp approaches it, but I think if he goes out to win it, I think the Reds will do the business.
It's interesting that they've only got three pre-season, well, that'd be the third pre-season game.
Yeah, then
game.
That's it.
I'm going to have to have a look now what their fixture list in August is like.
But they've got West Ham away first up, which is like, it's a tough one.
There could be slips there, couldn't it, potentially, if they're undercooked?
Well, you've just talked...
I love this, we're already talking about Man City.
You've just talked United into having a good August. We've got to go to Old Trafford third game,
no problem, that's putting an end to that.
That's the end of the good August.
Well, my wish for the season is no penalties. That's all I'm asking for, because it's too much for the shootouts. But yeah, three games this week. We're going to be previewing, reviewing all of them, so come and join us. But as Klopp says, you don't have to be worried what you think about us, just get excited, and we've all got excited. So thanks to Shu, thanks to Amelia, and thanks to John, and thank you to you for listening. Sports Social Podcast Network.